Then came the rinse cycle. Ah, warm. Well, perhaps not warm, but not quite as cold, and definitely feeling warm to his thoroughly chilled body. Then, even as he was considering touching the contact spot again to stop the water, and was wondering how Lieselore had come out dry when there was absolutely no towel or towel substitute in the place, the water stopped. It was followed by a blast of air that would have certainly bowled him over if it had not come from various directions equally. It was hot, almost too hot. It took far less energy, Trevise knew, to heat air than to heat water. The hot air steamed the water off him, and in a few minutes he was able to step out as dry as though he had never encountered water in his life. Lieselore seemed to have recovered completely. "Do you feel well?" "Pretty well," said Trevise. Actually, he felt astonishingly comfortable. "All I had to do was prepare myself for the temperature. You didn't tell me." "Sludge soft," said Lieselore with mild contempt. He borrowed her deodorant, then began to dress, conscious of the fact that she had fresh underwear and he did not. He said, "What should I have called that world?" She said, "We refer to it as the oldest." He said, "How was I to know the name I used was forbidden? Did you tell me? Did you ask?" "How was I to know to ask?" "You know now." "I'm bound to forget." "You had better not." "What's the difference?" Trevise felt his temper rising. "It's just a word, a sound." Lieselore said darkly, "There are words one doesn't say. Do you say every word you know under all circumstances?" "Some words are vulgar. Some are inappropriate. Some, under particular circumstances, would be hurtful. Which is that word I used?" Lieselore said, "It's a sad word, a solemn word. It represents a world that was ancestor to us all and that now doesn't exist. It's tragic, and we feel it because it was near to us. We prefer not to speak of it, or, if we must, not to use its name." "And the crossing of fingers at me, how does that relieve the hurt and sadness?" Lieselore's face flushed. "That was an automatic reaction, and I don't thank you for forcing it on me. There are people who believe that the word, even the thought, brings on misfortune, and that is how they ward it off." "Do you, too, believe crossing fingers wards off misfortune?" "No. Well, yes, in a way. It makes me uneasy if I don't do it." She didn't look at him. Then, as though eager to shift the subject, she said quickly, "And how is that black-haired woman of yours of the essence with respect to your mission to reach that world you mentioned?" "Say the oldest, or would you rather not even say that?" "I would rather not discuss it at all, but I asked you a question." "I believe that her people reached their present world as emigrants from the oldest." "As we did," said Lieselore proudly. "But her people have traditions of some sort, which she says are the key to understanding the oldest, but only if we reach it and can study its records." "She is lying." "Perhaps, but we must check it out." "If you have this woman with her problematical knowledge, and if you want to reach the oldest with her, why did you come to Camporeon?" "To find the location of the oldest. I had a friend once who, like myself, was a foundationer. He, however, was descended from Camporellian ancestors, and he assured me that much of the history of the oldest was well known on Camporeon. Did he indeed? And did he tell you any of its history? Yes, said Trevise, reaching for the truth again. He said that the oldest was a dead world, entirely radioactive. He did not know why, but he thought that it might be the result of nuclear explosions, in a war, perhaps. No, said Lieselore explosively. No, there was no war, or no, the oldest is not radioactive. It is radioactive, but there was no war. Then how did it become radioactive? It could not have been radioactive to begin with, since human life began on the oldest. There would have been no life on it ever. Lieselore seemed to hesitate. She stood erect and was breathing deeply, almost gasping. She said, It was a punishment. It was a world that used robots. Do you know what robots are? Yes. They had robots, and for that they were punished. Every world that has had robots has been punished and no longer exists. Who punished them, Lieselore? He who punishes? The forces of history? I don't know. She looked away from him, uncomfortable, then said in a lower voice, Ask others. I would like to, but whom do I ask? Are there those on Camporeon who have studied primeval history? There are. They are not popular with us, with the average Camporellian, but the foundation, your foundation, insists on intellectual freedom, as they call it. Not a bad insistence, in my opinion, said Trevise. All is bad that is imposed from without, said Lieselore. Trevise shrugged. There was no purpose in arguing the matter. He said, My friend Dr. Pellerat is himself a primeval historian of a sort. He would, I am sure, like to meet his Camporellian colleagues. Can you arrange that, Lieselore? She nodded. There is a historian named Vasil Deniador, who is based at the university here in the city. He does not teach class, but he may be able to tell you what you want to know. Why doesn't he teach class? It's not that he is forbidden. It's just that students do not elect his course. I presume, said Trevise, trying not to say it sardonically, that the students are encouraged not to elect it. Why should they want to? He is a skeptic. We have them, you know. There are always individuals who pit their minds against the general modes of thought and who are arrogant enough to feel that they alone are right and that the many are wrong. Might it not be that could actually be so in many cases? Never, snapped Lieselore, with a firmness of belief that made it quite clear that no further discussion in that direction would be of any use. And for all his skepticism, he will be forced to tell you exactly what any Camporellian would tell you. And that is? That if you search for the oldest, you will not find it. XXIV. In the private quarters assigned them, Pellerat listened to Trevise thoughtfully, his long, solemn face expressionless, then said, Vasil Deniador, I do not recall having heard of him, but it may be that back on the ship I will find papers by him in my library. Are you sure you haven't heard of him? Think, said Trevise. I don't recall at the moment having heard of him, said Pellerat cautiously. But after all, my dear chap, There must be hundreds of estimable scholars I haven't heard of, or have but can't remember. Still, he can't be first class, or you would have heard of him. The study of Earth. Practice saying the oldest, Genoff. It would complicate matters otherwise. The study of the oldest, said Pellerat, is not a well-rewarded niche in the corridors of learning, so that first-class scholars, even in the field of primeval history, would not tend to find their way there. Or, if we put it the other way around, those who are already there do not make enough of a name for themselves in an uninterested world to be considered first class, even if they were. I am not first class in anyone's estimation, I am sure. Bliss said tenderly,
In mine, Pell?
Yes, certainly in yours, my dear, said Pellerat, smiling slightly. But you are not judging me in my capacity as scholar. It was almost night now, going by the clock, and Trevise felt himself grow slightly impatient, as he always did when Bliss and Pellerat traded endearments. He said, I'll try to arrange our seeing this Deniador tomorrow, but if he knows as little about the matter as the minister does, we're not going to be much better off than we are now. Pellerat said, He may be able to lead us to someone more useful. I doubt it. This world's attitude toward Earth, but I had better practice speaking of it elliptically too. This world's attitude toward the oldest is a foolish and superstitious one. He turned away. But it's been a rough day, and we ought to think of an evening meal, if we can face their uninspired cookery, and then begin thinking of getting some sleep. Have you two learned to use the shower? My dear fellow, said Pellerat, we have been very kindly treated. We've received all sorts of instructions, most of which we didn't need. Bliss said, Listen, Trevise, what about the ship? What about it? Is the Comparellian government confiscating it? No, I don't think they will. Ah, very pleasant. Why aren't they? Because I persuaded the minister to change her mind. Pellerat said, Astonishing. She didn't seem a particularly persuadable individual to me. Bliss said, I don't know. It was clear from the texture of her mind that she was attracted to Trevise. Trevise looked at Bliss with sudden exasperation. Did you do that, Bliss? What do you mean, Trevise? I mean, tamper with her. I didn't tamper. However, when I noted that she was attracted to you, I couldn't resist just snapping an inhibition or two. It was a very small thing to do. Those inhibitions might have snapped anyway, and it seemed to be important to make certain that she was filled with goodwill toward you. Goodwill? It was more than that. She's softened, yes, but post-coitally. Pellerat said, Surely you don't mean, old man. Why not? Said Trevise testily. She may be past her first youth, but she knew the art well. She was no beginner, I assure you. Nor will I play the gentleman and lie on her behalf. It was her idea, thanks to Bliss's fiddling with her inhibitions, and I was not in a position to refuse, even if that thought had occurred to me, which it didn't. Come, Janoff, don't stand there looking puritanical. It's been months since I've had an opportunity. You've... And he waved his hand vaguely in Bliss's direction. Believe me, Golan, said Pellerat, embarrassed. If you are interpreting my expression as puritanical, you mistake me. I have no objection. Bliss said,
But she is puritanical. I meant to make her warm toward you. I did not count on a sexual paroxysm.
Trevise said, But that is exactly what you brought on, my little interfering Bliss. It may be necessary for the minister to play the Puritan in public, but if so, that seems merely to stoke the fires.
And so, provided you scratch the itch, she will betray the foundation.
She would have done that in any case, said Trevise. She wanted the ship. He broke off and said in a whisper, Are we being overheard? Bliss said,
No.
Are you sure?
It is certain. It is impossible to impinge upon the mind of Gaia in any unauthorized fashion without Gaia being aware of it.
In that case, Camporeon wants the ship for itself, a valuable addition to its fleet.
Surely the Foundation would not allow that.
Camporeon does not intend to have the Foundation know. Bliss sighed.
There are your isolates. The minister intends to betray the Foundation on behalf of Camporeon, and in return for sex, will promptly betray Camporeon, too. And as for Trevise, he will gladly sell his body's services as a way of inducing the betrayal. What anarchy there is in this galaxy of yours! What chaos!
Trevise said coldly, You are wrong, young woman.
In what I have just said, I am not a young woman. I am Gaia. I am all of Gaia.
Then you are wrong, Gaia. I did not sell my body's services. I gave them gladly. I enjoyed it and did no one harm. As for the consequences, they turned out well from my standpoint, and I accept that. And if Camporeon wants the ship for its own purposes, who is to say who is right in this matter? It is a Foundation ship, but it was given to me to search for Earth. It is mine, then, until I complete the search, and I feel that the Foundation has no right to go back on its agreement. As for Camporeon, it does not enjoy Foundation domination, so it dreams of independence. In its own eyes, it is correct to do so and to deceive the Foundation, for that is not an act of treason to them, but an act of patriotism. Who knows?
Exactly. Who knows? In a galaxy of anarchy, how is it possible to sort out reasonable actions from unreasonable ones? How to decide between right and wrong, good and evil, justice and crime, useful and useless? And how do you explain the minister's betrayal of her own government when she lets you keep the ship? Does she long for personal independence from an oppressive world? Is she a traitor or a personal one-woman self-patriot?
To be truthful, said Trevise, I don't know that she was willing to let me have my ship simply because she was grateful to me for the pleasure I gave her. I believe she made that decision only when I told her I was searching for the oldest. It is a world of ill omen to her, and we and the ship that carries us, by searching for it, have become ill-omened too. It is my feeling that she feels she incurred the ill omen for herself and her world by attempting to take the ship, which she may by now be viewing with horror. Perhaps she feels that by allowing us and our ship to leave and go about our business, she is averting the misfortune from Camporeon, and is in that way performing a patriotic act.
If that were so, which I doubt, Trevise, superstition is the spring of the action. Do you admire that?
I neither admire nor condemn. Superstition always directs action in the absence of knowledge. The Foundation believes in the Selden plan. Though no one in our realm can understand it,
interpret its details, or use it to predict. We follow blindly out of ignorance and faith. And isn't that superstition?
Yes, it might be.
And Gaia, too. You believe I have given the correct decision in judging that Gaia should absorb the galaxy into one large organism. But you do not know why I should be right, or how safe it would be for you to follow that decision. You are willing to go along only out of ignorance and faith, and are even annoyed with me for trying to find evidence that will remove the ignorance and make mere faith unnecessary. Isn't that superstition?
I think he has you there, Bliss, said Pellerat.
Bliss said, Not so. He will either find nothing at all in this search, or he will find something that confirms his decision.
Trevise said, And to back up that belief, you have only ignorance and faith. In other words, superstition.
Basil Deniador was a small man, little of feature, with a way of looking up by raising his eyes without raising his head. This, combined with the brief smiles that periodically lit his face, gave him the appearance of laughing silently at the world. His office was long and narrow, filled with tapes that seemed to be in wild disorder, not because there was any definite evidence for that, but because they were not evenly placed in their recesses, so that they gave the shelves a snaggletoothed appearance. The three seats he indicated for his visitors were not matched, and showed signs of having been recently and imperfectly dusted. He said,
Genoff Pellerat, Golan Trevise, and Bliss. I do not have your second name, madam.
Bliss, she said, is all I am usually called, and sat down.
It is enough after all, said Deniador, twinkling at her.
You are attractive enough to be forgiven if you had no name at all.
It is enough after all, said Deniador, twinkling at her.
You are attractive enough to be forgiven if you had no name at all.
All were sitting now. Deniador said,
I have heard of you, Dr. Pellerat, though we have never corresponded. You are a foundationer, are you not, from Terminus?
Yes, Dr. Deniador.
And you, Councilman Trevise, I seem to have heard that recently you were expelled from the council and exiled. I don't think I have ever understood why.
Not expelled, sir. I am still a member of the council, although I don't know when I will take up my duties again.
Nor exiled, quite. I was assigned a mission, concerning which we wish to consult you.
Happy to try to help, said Deniador. And the blissful lady, is she from Terminus, too?
Trevise interposed quickly. She is from elsewhere, Doctor.
Ah, a strange world, this elsewhere. A most unusual collection of human beings are native to it. But since two of you are from the Foundation's capital at Terminus, and the third is an attractive young woman, and Mitsa Lizalor is not known for her affection for either category. How is it that she recommends you to my care so warmly?
I think, said Trevise, to get rid of us. The sooner you help us, you see, the sooner we will leave Camporeon.
Deniador eyed Trevise with interest, again the twinkling smile, and said,
Of course, a vigorous young man such as yourself might attract her, whatever his origin. She plays the role of cold vestal well, but not perfectly.
I know nothing about that, said Trevise stiffly.
And you had better not, in public at least. but I am a skeptic, and I am professionally unattuned to believing in surfaces. So, come, councilman, what is your mission? Let me find out if I can help you.
Trevise said, In this, Dr. Pellerat is our spokesman.
I have no objection to that, said Deniador. Dr. Pellerat.
Pellerat said, To put it at the simplest, dear doctor, I have all my mature life attempted to penetrate to the basic core of knowledge concerning the world on which the human species originated, and I was sent out, along with my good friend Golan Trevise, although, to be sure, I did not know him at the time, to find, if we could, the, oldest, I believe you call it.
The oldest, said Deniador. I take it you mean Earth.
Pellerat's jaw dropped. Then he said with a slight stutter, I was under the impression that is, I was given to understand that one did not... He looked at Trevise rather helplessly. Trevise said, Minister Lieselor told me that the word was not used on Camporeon.
You mean she did this?
Deniador's mouth turned downward, his nose screwed up, and he thrust his arms vigorously forward, crossing the first two fingers on each hand. Yes, said Trevise, that's what I mean. Deniador relaxed and laughed.
Nonsense, gentlemen. We do it as a matter of habit. And in the backwoods they may be serious about it, but on the whole it doesn't matter. I don't know any Camporellian who wouldn't say earth when annoyed or startled. It's the most common vulgarism we have.
Vulgarism? Said Pellerat faintly.
Or expletive, if you prefer.
Nevertheless, said Trevise, the minister seemed quite upset when I used the word.
Oh, well, she's a mountain woman.
What does that mean, sir?
What it says. Mitza Lizalor is from the central mountain range. The children out there are brought up in what is called the good old-fashioned way, which means that no matter how well-educated they become, you can never knock those crossed fingers out of them.
Then the word earth doesn't bother you at all, does it, Doctor? Said Bliss.
Not at all, dear lady. I am a skeptic.
Trevise said, I know what the word skeptic means in Galactic, but how do you use the word?
Exactly as you do, Councilman. I accept only what I am forced to accept by reasonably reliable evidence, and keep that acceptance tentative, pending the arrival of further evidence. That doesn't make us popular.
Why not? Said Trevise.
We wouldn't be popular anywhere. Where is the world whose people don't prefer a comfortable, warm, and well-worn belief, however illogical, to the chilly winds of uncertainty? Consider how you believe in the Selden plan without evidence.
Yes, said Trevise, studying his finger ends. I put that forward yesterday as an example, too. Pellerat said, May I return to the subject, old fellow? What is known about Earth that a skeptic would accept? Deniador said,
Very little. We can assume that there is a single planet on which the human species developed, because it is unlikely in the extreme that the same species, so nearly identical as to be interfertile, would develop on a number of worlds, or even on just two independently. We can choose to call this world of origin Earth. The belief is general here that Earth exists in this corner of the galaxy, for the worlds here are unusually old, and it is likely that the first worlds to be settled were close to Earth rather than far from it.
And has the Earth any unique characteristics aside from being the planet of origin? Asked Pellerat eagerly.
Do you have something in mind? Said Deniador with his quick smile.
I'm thinking of its satellite, which some call the Moon. That would be unusual, wouldn't it?
That's a leading question, Dr. Pellerat. You may be putting thoughts into my mind.
I do not say what it is that would make the Moon unusual.
Its size, of course. Am I right? Yes, I see I am. All the legends of Earth speak of its vast array of living species and of its vast satellite, one that is some 3,000 to 3,500 kilometers in diameter. The vast array of life is easy to accept, since it would naturally have come about through biological evolution, if what we know of the process is accurate. A giant satellite is more difficult to accept. No other inhabited world in the galaxy has such a satellite. Large satellites are invariably associated with the uninhabited and uninhabitable gas giants. As a skeptic, then, I prefer not to accept the existence of the Moon.
Pellerat said, If Earth is unique in its possession of millions of species, might it not also be unique in its possession of a giant satellite? One uniqueness might imply the other.
Deniador smiled. I don't see how the presence of millions of species on Earth could create a giant satellite out of nothing.
But the other way around. Perhaps a giant satellite could help create the millions of species.
I don't see how that could be either.
Treviz said, What about the story of Earth's radioactivity?
That is universally told, universally believed.
But, said Treviz, Earth could not have been so radioactive as to preclude life in the billions of years when it supported life. How did it become radioactive? A nuclear war?
That is the most common opinion, Councilman Treviz.
From the manner in which you say that, I gather you don't believe it.
There is no evidence that such a war took place. Common belief, even universal belief, is not in itself evidence.
What else might have happened?
There is no evidence that anything happened. The radioactivity might be as purely invented a legend as the large satellite.
Pellerat said, What is the generally accepted story of Earth's history? I have, during my professional career, collected a large number of origin legends, many of them involving a world called Earth, or some name very much like that. I have none from Comporion, nothing beyond the vague mention of a Ben Bali, who might have come from nowhere, for all that Comporelian legends say.
That's not surprising. We don't usually export our legends, and I'm astonished you have found references even to Ben Bali. Superstition again.
But you are not superstitious, and you would not hesitate to talk about it, would you?
That's correct, said the small historian, casting his eyes upward at Pellerat. It would certainly add greatly, perhaps even dangerously, to my unpopularity if I did. But you three are leaving Comporion soon, and I take it you will never quote me as a source.
You have our word of honor, said Pellerat quickly.
Then here is a summary of what is supposed to have happened, shorn of any supernaturalism or moralizing. Earth existed as the sole world of human beings for an immeasurable period, And then, about 20 to 25,000 years ago, the human species developed interstellar travel by way of the hyperspatial jump and colonized a group of planets. The settlers on these planets made use of robots, which had first been devised on Earth before the days of hyperspatial travel. And do you know what robots are, by the way?
Yes, said Trevise. We have been asked that more than once. We know what robots are.
The settlers, with a thoroughly roboticized society, developed a high technology and unusual longevity and despised their ancestral world. According to more dramatic versions of their story, they dominated and oppressed the ancestral world. Eventually, then, Earth sent out a new group of settlers, among whom robots were forbidden. Of the new worlds, Comporion was among the first. Our own patriots insist it was the first, but there is no evidence of that that a skeptic can accept. The first group of settlers died out, and...
Trevise said, Why did the first set die out, Dr. Deniodor?
Why? Usually, they are imagined by our romantics as having been punished for their crimes by he who punishes, though no one bothers to say why he waited so long. But one doesn't have to resort to fairy tales. It is easy to argue that a society that depends totally on robots becomes soft and decadent, dwindling and dying out of sheer boredom, or more subtly, by losing the will to live. The second wave of settlers, without robots, lived on and took over the entire galaxy. But Earth grew radioactive and slowly dropped out of sight. The reason usually given for this is that there were robots on Earth, too, since the first wave had encouraged that.
Bliss, who had listened to the account with some visible impatience, said,
Well, Dr. Deniodor, radioactivity or not, and however many waves of settlers there might have been, the crucial question is a simple one. Exactly where is Earth? What are its coordinates?
Deniodor said,
The answer to that question is, I don't know. But come, it is time for lunch. I can have one brought in, and we can discuss Earth over it for as long as you want.
You don't know, said Trevise, the sound of his voice rising in pitch and intensity.
Actually, as far as I know, no one knows.
But that is impossible.
Councilman, said Deniodor with a soft sigh, if you wish to call the truth impossible, that is your privilege, but it will get you nowhere.
Chapter 7. Leaving Comporion. 26. Luncheon consisted of a heap of soft, crusty balls that came in different shades and that contained a variety of fillings. Deniodor picked up a small object, which unfolded into a pair of thin, transparent gloves, and put them on. His guests followed suit. Bliss said,
What is inside these objects, please?
Deniodor said,
The pink ones are filled with spicy chopped fish, a great Comporellian delicacy. These yellow ones contain a cheese filling that is very mild. The green ones contain a vegetable mixture. Do eat them while they are quite warm. Later, we will have hot almond pie and the usual beverages. I might recommend the hot cider. In a cold climate, we have a tendency to heat our foods, even desserts.
You do yourself well, said Pellerat.
Not really, said Deniodor. I'm being hospitable to guests. For myself, I get along on very little. I don't have much body mass to support, as you have probably noticed. Trevise bit into one of the pink ones and found it very fishy indeed, with an overlay of spices that was pleasant to the taste, but which, he thought, along with the fish itself, would remain with him for the rest of the day and perhaps into the night. When he withdrew the object with the bite taken out of it, he found that the crust had closed in over the contents. There was no squirt, no leakage, and for a moment he wondered at the purpose of the gloves. There seemed no chance of getting his hands moist and sticky if he didn't use them, so he decided it was a matter of hygiene. The gloves substituted for a washing of the hands if that were inconvenient, and custom probably now dictated their use, even if the hands were washed. Liselore hadn't used gloves when he had eaten with her the day before. Perhaps that was because she was a mountain woman. He said, "Would it be unmannerly to talk business over lunch?"
"By Camporellian standards, Councilman, it would be. But you are my guests, and we will go by your standards. If you wish to speak seriously, and do not think or care that that might diminish your pleasure in the food, please do so, and I will join you."
Trevise said, "Thank you." Minister Liselore implied, "No," she stated quite bluntly, "that skeptics were unpopular on this world. Is that so?" Deniador's good humor seemed to intensify.
"Certainly. How hurt we'd be if we weren't. Camporellon, you see, is a frustrated world. Without any knowledge of the details, there is the general mythic belief that once, many millennia ago, when the inhabited galaxy was small, Camporellon was the leading world. We never forget that, and the fact that in known history we have not been leaders irks us, fills us, the population in general, that is, with a feeling of injustice. Yet what can we do? The government was forced to be a loyal vassal of the emperor once, and is a loyal associate of the foundation now. And the more we are made aware of our subordinate position, the stronger the belief in the great mysterious days of the past become. What then can Camporellon do? They could never defy the empire in older times, and they can't openly defy the foundation now. They take refuge, therefore, in attacking and hating us, since we don't believe the legends and laugh at the superstitions. Nevertheless, we are safe from the grosser effects of persecution. We control the technology, and we fill the faculties of the universities. Some of us, who are particularly outspoken, have difficulty in teaching classes openly. I have that difficulty, for instance, though I have my students and hold meetings quietly off campus. Nevertheless, if we were really driven out of public life, the technology would fail, and the universities would lose accreditation with the galaxy generally. Presumably, such is the folly of human beings. The prospects of intellectual suicide might not stop them from indulging their hatred, but the Foundation supports us. Therefore, we are constantly scolded and sneered at and denounced, and never touched."
Trevise said, "Is it popular opposition that keeps you from telling us where Earth is? Do you fear that, despite everything, the anti-skeptic feeling might turn ugly if you go too far?" Deniador shook his head.
"No. Earth's location is unknown. I am not hiding anything from you out of fear, or for any other reason."
"But look," said Trevise urgently. "There are a limited number of planets in this sector of the galaxy that possess the physical characteristics associated with habitability, and almost all of them must be not only inhabitable, but inhabited, and therefore well known to you. How difficult would it be to explore the sector for a planet that would be habitable were it not for the fact that it was radioactive? Besides that, you would look for such a planet with a large satellite in attendance. Between radioactivity and a large satellite,
Earth would be absolutely unmistakable and could not be missed even with only a casual search. It might take some time, but that would be the only difficulty.
Deniador said, The skeptic's view is, of course, that Earth's radioactivity and its large satellite are both simply legends. If we look for them, we look for sparrow milk and rabbit feathers.
Perhaps, but that shouldn't stop Comporion from at least taking on the search. If they find a radioactive world of the proper size for habitability with a large satellite, what an appearance of credibility it would lend to Corporalian legendry in general.
Deniador laughed. It may be that Comporion doesn't search for that very reason. If we fail, or if we find an Earth obviously different from the legends, the reverse would take place. Comporalian legendry in general would be blasted and made into a laughingstock. Comporion wouldn't risk that.
Trevise paused, then went on very earnestly. Besides, even if we discount those two uniquities, if there is such a word in Galactic, of radioactivity and a large satellite, there is a third that, by definition, must exist, without any reference to legends. Earth must have upon it either a flourishing life of incredible diversity, or the remnants of one, or at the very least, the fossil record of such a one.
Deniador said, Councilman, while Comporion has sent out no organized search party for Earth, we do have occasion to travel through space, and we occasionally have reports from ships that have strayed from their intended routes for one reason or another. Jumps are not always perfect, as perhaps you know. Nevertheless, there have been no reports of any planets with properties resembling those of the legendary Earth, or any planet that is bursting with life. Nor is any ship likely to land on what seems an uninhabited planet in order that the crew might go fossil hunting. If then, in thousands of years, nothing of the sort has been reported, I am perfectly willing to believe that locating Earth is impossible, because Earth is not there to be located.
Trevise said in frustration, But Earth must be somewhere. Somewhere there is a planet on which humanity and all the familiar forms of life associated with humanity evolved. If Earth is not in this section of the galaxy, it must be elsewhere.
Perhaps, said Deniador cold-bloodedly, but in all this time it hasn't turned up anywhere.
People haven't really looked for it.
Well, apparently you are. I wish you luck, but I would never bet on your success.
Trevise said, Had there been attempts to determine the possible position of Earth by indirect means, by some means other than a direct search?
Yes,
said two voices at once. Deniador, who was the owner of one of the voices, said to Pellerat,
Are you thinking of Yareth's project?
I am, said Pellerat.
Then would you explain it to the councilman? I think he would more readily believe you than me.
Pellerat said, You see, Golan, in the last days of the Empire, there was a time when the search for origins, as they called it, was a popular pastime, perhaps to get away from the unpleasantness of the surrounding reality. The Empire was in a process of disintegration at that time, you know. It occurred to a Livian historian, Humbal Yareth, that whatever the planet of origin, it would have settled worlds near itself sooner than it would settle planets farther away. In general, the farther a world from the point of origin, the later it would have been settled. Suppose, then, one recorded the date of settlement of all habitable planets in the galaxy and made networks of all that were a given number of millennia old. There could be a network drawn through all planets 10,000 years old, another through those 12,000 years old, still another through those 15,000 years old. Each network would, in theory, be roughly spherical, and they should be roughly concentric. The older networks would form spheres smaller in radius than the younger ones, and if one worked out all the centers, they should fall within a comparatively small volume of space that would include the planet of origin, Earth.
Pellerat's face was very earnest as he kept drawing spherical surfaces with his cupped hands.
Do you see my point, Golan?
Trevise nodded.
Yes, but I take it that it didn't work.
Theoretically, it should have, old fellow. One trouble was that times of origin were totally inaccurate. Every world exaggerated its own age to one degree or another, and there was no easy way of determining age independently of legend.
Bliss said, Carbon-14 decay in ancient timber.
Certainly, dear, said Pellerat. But you would have had to get cooperation from the worlds in question, and that was never given. No world wanted its own exaggerated claim of age to be destroyed, and the Empire was then in no position to override local objections in a matter so unimportant. It had other things on its mind. All that Yarov could do was to make use of worlds that were only 2,000 years old at most, and whose founding had been meticulously recorded under reliable circumstances. There were few of those, and while they were distributed in roughly spherical symmetry, the center was relatively close to Trantor, the imperial capital, because that was where the colonizing expeditions had originated for those relatively few worlds. That, of course, was another problem. Earth was not the only point of origin of settlement for other worlds. As time went on, the older worlds sent out settlement expeditions of their own, and at the time of the height of empire, Trantor was a rather copious source of those.
Yarov was unfairly laughed at and ridiculed, and his professional reputation was destroyed.
Trevise said, I get the story, Janov. Dr. Deniador, is there then nothing at all you could give me that represents the faintest possibility of hope? Is there any other world where it is conceivable there may be some information concerning Earth?
Deniador sank into doubtful thought for a while.
Well, he said at last, drawing out the word hesitantly, as a skeptic, I must tell you that I'm not sure that Earth exists or has ever existed. However...
He fell silent again. Finally, Bliss said,
I think you thought of something that might be important, Doctor.
Important? I doubt it, said Deniador faintly. Perhaps amusing, however. Earth is not the only planet whose position is a mystery. There are the worlds of the first group of settlers, the spacers, as they are called in our legends. Some call the planets they inhabited the spacer worlds. Others call them the forbidden worlds. The latter name is now the usual one. In their pride and prime, the legend goes, the spacers had lifetimes stretching out for centuries, and refused to allow our own short-lived ancestors to land on their worlds. After we had defeated them, the situation was reversed. We scorned to deal with them and left them to themselves, forbidding our own ships and traders to deal with them. Hence, those planets became the Forbidden Worlds. We were certain, so the legend states, that He who punishes would destroy them without our intervention, and apparently he did. At least no spacer has appeared in the galaxy to our knowledge in many millennia.
Do you think that the spacers would know about Earth? Said Trevise.
Conceivably, since their worlds were older than any of ours. That is, if any spacers exist, which is extremely unlikely.
Even if they don't exist, their worlds do and may contain records.
If you can find the worlds.
Trevise looked exasperated. Do you mean to say that the key to Earth, the location of which is unknown, may be found on spacer worlds, the location of which is also unknown?
Deniador shrugged.
We have had no dealings with them for 20,000 years. No thought of them. They, too, like Earth, have receded into the mists.
How many worlds did the spacers live on?
The legends speak of 50 such worlds, a suspiciously round number. There were probably far fewer.
And you don't know the location of a single one of the 50?
Well, now, I wonder.
What do you wonder?
Deniador said,
Since primeval history is my hobby, as it is Dr. Pellerat's, I have occasionally explored old documents in search of anything that might refer to early time, something more than legends. Last year, I came upon the records of an old ship, records that were almost indecipherable. It dated back to the very old days when our world was not yet known as Camporeon. The name Bailey World was used, which it seems to me may be an even earlier form of the Benbali world of our legends.
Pellerat said excitedly, Have you published it?
No, said Deniador. I do not wish to dive until I am sure there is water in the swimming pool, as the old saying has it. You see, the record says that the captain of the ship had visited a spacer world and taken off with him a spacer woman.
Bliss said,
But you said that the spacers did not allow visitors.
Exactly. And that is the reason I don't publish the material. It sounds incredible. There are vague tales that could be interpreted as referring to the spacers and to their conflict with the settlers, our own ancestors. Such tales exist not only on Camporeon, but on many worlds in many variations, but all are in absolute accord in one respect. The two groups, spacers and settlers, did not mingle. There was no social contact, let alone sexual contact. And yet, apparently, the settler captain and the spacer woman were held together by bonds of love. This is so incredible that I see no chance of the story being accepted as anything but, at best, a piece of romantic historical fiction.
Trevise looked disappointed. Is that all?
No, Councilman, there is one more matter. I came across some figures in what was left of the log of the ship that might, or might not, represent spatial coordinates. If they were, and I repeat, since my skeptic's honor compels me to, that they might not be, then internal evidence made me conclude they were the spatial coordinates of three of the spacer worlds. One of them might be the spacer world where the captain landed, and from which he withdrew his spacer love.
Trevise said, Might it not be that even if the tale is fiction, the coordinates are real?
It might be, said Deniador. I will give you the figures, and you are free to use them, but you might get nowhere. And yet I have an amusing notion.
His quick smile made its appearance. What is that? Said Trevise.
What if one of those sets of coordinates represented Earth?
XXVII. Camporeon's sun, distinctly orange, was larger in appearance than the sun of Terminus, but it was low in the sky and gave out little heat. The wind, fortunately light, touched Trevise's cheek with icy fingers.
He shivered inside the electrified coat he had been given by Mitsa Lizalor, who now stood next to him. He said, "It must warm up sometime, Mitsa." She glanced up at the sun briefly and stood there in the emptiness of the spaceport, showing no signs of discomfort. Tall, large, wearing a lighter coat than Trevise had on, and if not